Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another night of a great show. You're listening to Spiritual Connection Radio, and my name is Mark Rawson, and I have my co-host Pamela Tor on with me. Pam, are you there?
I am, Mark. Hi.
Oh, it's great to have you on. I know we have an exciting guest, so I'm going to go ahead and let you do the introduction, and we'll get this show rolling.
Okay. Well, welcome. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and Spiritual Connections. Tonight we have a very special guest by the name of Jerry Gavin. Jerry has had some amazing experiences, and I'm so looking forward to the show because he's so interesting and in-depth. And I want to begin right away by asking Jerry a little bit about himself.
Well, hi, Pam. Hi, Mark. How are you guys doing tonight?
It's
good.
Great to have you here. Thank you.
It's great to be here. Pam, I guess to sort of start the story off, if you don't mind me kind of starting at the very beginning, for me, this journey, this spiritual journey that I've been on, that's been almost 20 years now, it started at a time when I was a great spiritual skeptic. I was not a believer in the paranormal. I wasn't a believer. I grew up in a traditional kind of Catholic household, so I did have your basic kind of religious beliefs, and that I knew there were spiritual things out there. But the concept that we would ever have the ability to directly communicate or directly have any kind of a contact in that was totally an alien concept to me. And as I said, I was kind of a card-carrying skeptic. And then one day an experience happened, and sometimes there are those experiences that are just undeniable. You know, as much as you would like to deny them, you really can't. My current girlfriend, who was just we were good friends at the time, we're actually in the start of a friendship, had bought a house and was looking for a roommate. And I came in to share the house with her. And it was a beautiful house. I mean, it was the kind of house you dream of living in, right around a corner, beautiful neighborhood, sun streaming through, like Center Hall Colonial. The only drawback about this house is that it turned out that it was incredibly haunted. And when nighttime would come around, the energy of the house would just totally change. I would lie in bed and hear breathing next to me. And when my eyes were open or closed, I could see these shapes of figures that would just swoop around the room and swoop down to my face and, you know, move around. Literally, it was like, you know, when you go to the movies and you see a movie about a haunted house and you think, oh, that's just crazy stuff. That's what it was like being in this house. And
wow.
I honestly started to feel in the first few days of it, and even as it went past a week, I thought it was me. I really did believe that I was kind of losing my sanity because no one else in the house seemed to be talking about anything and mentioning anything. And, you know, my friend and I were still pretty new friends, so I was kind of nervous to talk to her about it. And finally I got up the courage one day and said, listen, anything weird you notice about this house? And she was like so relieved. She said, oh my God, thank God, I thought it was me. And she started talking about her experiences and what she was seeing. And we didn't know what to do. If it were a rental, you know, I joke about it that we would have been on the first bus out of town, but, you know, it wasn't. It was a house she had just bought, so we needed to figure out how to do something about it. And as time went on, it was just ramping up. Now it wasn't just present in the evening. Now we noticed in the daytime that there was a mist that would actually hover at the top of the stairs and descend the stairs before it would finally dissipate at the lower level. There was a room in the house that was literally like 20 degrees colder than every other room. And we started to just look into everything and anything we could find to try to get help. I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we had both grown up Catholic, so we went and we visited our local parish and explained we had just moved into the neighborhood and what was going on. And it was so funny because the pastor of the parish came to the house, and he really was kind of cute because he stood in the downstairs foyer with a bottle of holy water, and he kind of sprinkled it all around the foyer and said, okay, that should do it. And we were like, well, no, Father, it's upstairs. It's upstairs all the problems. And he was so funny because he was like, nah, the holy water carries. It's going to be okay. So that obviously didn't do anything. And we started to just really panic because we didn't know what we did. And we thought about calling a psychic, but I didn't know anything about psychics. And I was, you know, as I said, I was very dubious about them. I kind of figured, you know, psychics I thought were charlatans. And I had one other friend who I was really close to and really trusted that I thought I could talk to about this. And it was a really great thing that I did, because when I told him about it, he said, you know, here's the deal. I've been going to this therapist recently, and he had gone to therapists for years and, you know, never much progress in what he did. And he said the thing about this therapist was, beside the fact that she was just a really great therapist, she also was psychic, and she came from a family of psychics, and it had, like, turbocharged his therapy, because every time he would try to, like, hide behind something, she would say, well, who's so-and-so, and what does this mean? And so he had just been, you know, moving through therapy like crazy and was doing great. So he said, why don't you give her a call, and maybe she could help you, which I did. And before I even got to explain anything, she proceeded to ask me to get a paper and pencil and said, something really weird is going on in your house. Could you just take this down? I'm getting information that I would like you to write down, which I did. And that was my first exposure to the concept of channeling, because she was actually channeling this information. And what it turned out to be was a ceremony, an exorcism, if you will, that myself, my girlfriend, and one other person would have to do on three different occasions with very specific instructions. And we did that. We followed the instructions, and it grew beyond the point where we even thought it would, because now we went from, you know, seemingly harmless kind of things that were happening to literally, as we would do these ceremonies, doors that would open and close by themselves, furniture drawers that would open and close, our house alarm system that would just go off all by itself. Even when we shut off the main circuit breaker, it would still go off. Things that were just inexplicable. And by the time we got to the third time of doing the ceremony, everything stopped and it was quiet when we were finished. My girlfriend felt really good. My daughter, who had helped us to do it, felt good. I just felt like crap. I felt like I had everything knocked out of me. And it was funny because my girlfriend had actually asked me if that's on to put right before we started, for some unknown reason, and she still to this day doesn't know what possessed her to ask me to do it, but she asked me to put a battery, a package of AA batteries in my shirt pocket. And when we had finished doing that last ceremony and I went to take them out of my pocket, they were like halfway melted. in my pocket. And over the course of the next few days after that last ceremony, although the house felt good, I was having that same effect on anything electronic. Cell phones just would totally dying on me. I went through literally 3 car batteries in the matter of a week, where every time I would go back to the place, you know, these car batteries weren't working. And the last one actually imploded, you know, when they sent it back for, you know, for trying to figure out what was the matter with it. So I called back the psychic to ask her what was going on, and she asked me if I had followed the instructions exactly, if I had stood at the north and made sure I had a compass, and was I the person always at the north in every room where we recited this, which I told her that I did, and she explained to me at that point, well, that was really important because I needed you to be at the north because all of this energy that was leaving the house was going to pass through you. There needed to be a portal, a person that would be able to pass through, and my sense was that you would be strong enough to do it, but also you are going to be needing to understand the difference between these energies in the future, in the work that you're going to do. Which at the time, guys, struck me as the funniest thing I had ever heard, because there was no way, no how, after what we had just gone through, that I wanted anything to do with anything spiritual and ghostly or anything remotely having to do with something that I couldn't see. Again, that was the last thing I ever thought. And she said to me before the end of that conversation that in about 2 years I would meet someone who was really going to change my life. She said, this is going to be someone you'll meet who you're going to enter into a partnership with that's going to bring your life in an entirely new direction. So, of course, I thought that that meant a person that I was going to meet. And over the course of those next 2 years, slowly but surely, things kept happening in my life that were making me open up to other stuff. We went to massage school. Me, again, just being a pragmatist, I did it really for the ability to earn a second income at that point. And I thought, you know, it was good work and it would be something that was good for people. But when I was doing the work, and we went to a school that was taught by a woman who not only was a really great massage therapist, but she had studied with Native American shamans and Latin American shamans. So she would every once in a while introduce the class to different ceremonial kinds of things, and it was always me in the class that would have these crazy experiences and these deep insights and stuff. And I would fight it. I would just fight it tooth and nail, you know, because I wanted nothing to do with this stuff. And finally, one day, I just decided, look, you know that saying of what you resist persists.
So, yeah,
I thought, you know what, maybe if I stop resisting it, maybe it'll go away, you know. So really that was my initial inclination, but what wound up happening is that as I stopped resisting it, it started to just come much more naturally. And I wound up then studying more about shamanism with her and then moving on to study with other teachers, began learning about things like soul retrieval and power retrieval and shamanic journeying. And almost 2 years to the date of that conversation with that psychic, I was at a super low point in my life. There just were a lot of very hard things going on, financially, family-wise, a lot of different things. And I guess because of that, I was at a very, a really good point of personal surrender. And I sat down on my bed one night, and there was something that always gnawed at me about angels. I always had this feeling that there was this other spiritual power out there that wasn't the guides I had talked to or the power animals that I came in contact with. But there was another presence I could feel lurking in the background. So I called out to this angel that I thought, you know, was out there and said, you know, if you would just tell me your name, I know I would figure out a way to talk to you. If you would just tell me your name. And I closed my eyes, and honestly, Mark Tom, I was not expecting an answer at that point. I just, you know, I think it was a rhetorical question. But I closed my eyes, and as though I was looking at a white movie screen, the word Margaret spelled itself out in very bold black letters. And I opened my eyes again, and I thought, Margaret, what kind of an angel name is Margaret? You know, I'm waiting for, like, Ezekiel or something, you know, something grand and like profound. So I closed my eyes again and said, you know, come, if you could tell me your name, you know, I really will try. And again, the name Margaret appeared. And then it appeared again and again, every type of font that you could think of. And finally, you know, after, you don't need to hit me with a 2x4 more than 20 or 30 times, and I generally get the point. But I got it within my head that the name was Margaret. And I tried a method of communication which I had never tried before, but felt right, and that was the concept of automatic writing. And I wrote a letter to Margaret, as though I was writing a letter to my best friend in the world, stating all the things that were going on in my life, and then started a letter back that said, Dear Jerry, and really felt so foolish at the time, because I thought to myself, you know, Jer, you're writing the letter back, how are you not going to get all the answers that you want to hear, you know, but all right, we'll go ahead and do it. And what came back could not have been further from what I thought I was going to hear. It was kind and loving and insightful and non-judgmental, and managed somehow to be telling me how all of the situations that were going on in my life I had created by the decisions that I made and the actions that I had taken, and began to even further tell me insights about the people in my life and the things that they were going through that touched my heart in ways, even people that I was really angry with at the time, that gave me a better understanding of who they were and what they were going through. And that was the beginning of all of this. And I you know, tried to validate those things over time and would speak to some of those people and just say, hey, sometimes, do you ever feel this way or that way? And they would say, yeah, I do, you know. And they thought that I was incredibly insightful, that I had understood how they were feeling. And here all the while, it was my new angel pen pal that was helping me to do this. And that just continued. For me, in the beginning, it was just writing letters to Margaret for my own personal guidance, and eventually I shared it with a friend or two, and would do letters for them, and then they would share it with people, and then so on and so on and so on. And there were finally some people that I did letters for who were themselves psychics, who were so impressed with the insight that Margaret brought to their lives that they began to refer people, and it just kind of took off with a life of its own in terms of you know, where that direction took off in her providing guidance for people's lives. So that, I'm sorry to just be talking so long. I didn't give you guys a chance to even get a word in edgewise, but that's how the whole thing got started.
Well, okay, great. It's actually perfect that you're talking so much. It's a fascinating story. So what was Margaret's basic message to you in terms of moving out into the world, other than your own counseling and the people, your close friends, the people close around you? Was there ever a message that asked you to move further out and to reach more people?
There was, actually, on a couple of different occasions. The first one being about 5 years or so into doing the readings and communicating with her. She asked me if I would develop a workshop to teach other people how they could communicate with their angels. And in so doing, asked me to develop a method that was something that came from the place that I understood, something that worked on from my truths and my understandings and my beliefs. And that evolved into a workshop that's called Angels and Shamans, which actually used a number of different shamanic-inspired exercises and original music and guided meditation that would help people to break through blockages that they would have to communicating with angels or spirit guides of any nature, but specifically angels, and eventually would then lead them on a guided journey to get their angel's name and get some initial information and then allow them to go back and do it again. So in the beginning, these were live workshops, and eventually then I went into the studio and made a recording of it, and it's still do that workshop live, and it's one of the things on my website that's still available as a recording. Then nothing really over time had come up until 2010. And at the very end of 2010, she asked me if I would begin to compile a book of her messages for the world. And I thought, I was kind of taken back by that, because I was so used to the concept of delivering messages to individuals. And she has this amazing ability, when she's delivering messages to individuals, to say things in just a way that, you know, people know she's speaking to them. She may use phrases that are very important to them, or ways of expression, or different things that everybody who she talks to knows that it's a very personal message. So I wonder, how is this going to work in terms of putting together a book of messages for the world? And, you know, when she said the world, too, my initial inclination when she was saying putting together messages for the world was that, you know, it's something people say, but I didn't realize that that was her intention, that her intention was truly that this message would go out to the world, and that there were powers that be that would assist to help to make that happen. So I started working on doing that in December of 2010, and actually did it for almost a full year, 10 months of doing these messages at any time that I had time that was free. I did a major part of it going back and forth on the bus to work in New York City. I worked as a publisher in New York City, and I would go back and forth in my commute and write in the morning and write at night to try to get the messages together. And eventually that started to compile, and then after the fact began to put it all together so that all of these messages that had kind of randomly been coming over the period of the year could be reassembled in ways that they made some sense. And from the very beginning, she said that she wished the book to be called Messages from Margaret, and that her primary purpose for wanting to do the book was, she said, there was an energy of pervasive fear on the planet right now, that there's fear of so many things. There's fear revolving around the relationships between people in different countries who have mistrust and fear for each other because they live in different countries and they have their own financial and whatever interests in the ownership of certain land, or there are certain religious belief systems who are mistrustful of people in other belief systems, or people who are so worried about money that money is actually, you know, now being driven by huge systems of fear. It's interesting, because she even points out in the book that the whole concept of money is really in itself just an idea. I mean, when you deal in the stock market, you sell the belief of what something is going to be worth. People even deal in futures. You know, you're predicting, you really are almost playing psychic with money. So that's what she describes, that when you have overwhelming fear and that then touches the economy, it has this ripple effect through the world. So the reason for the book was to bring messages to mankind, to let us know in a classic angelic fashion to fear not. She said that every time angels have ever appeared in any book of any religion, they always have come with the words, fear not. And their primary message is always to fear not. And she wanted to help to dissipate this fear, but to also to help us to remember who we are, to help us to remember the nature of what we come from, the grandness of our soul, the basis of what we really are, and how we really do have the power to create the life that we're living and to create the world around us.
How lovely.
Yeah, she has
a
beautiful message.
That's an amazing message.
Yeah, I absolutely, I was going through the book the other day, and it was just totally amazing to see, you know, the material that's in there. I highly recommend it for anybody that's out there. You know, since we're taking a little bit of break here, I'm actually going to go ahead and do our announcements for everybody. We are listening to Spiritual Connection Radio. If you want to find out more about this radio show or the people that we have on it or the upcoming guests on our schedule for the rest of the year, you can go to our radio website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And Jerry, why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find your book and where your website is, and maybe wrap up right after that with an idea of some of the services you have on your website.
Sure. You can reach me at my website is jerrygavin.com. That's Jerry with a G, so it's GerryGavin.com. And you can actually order the book through the website. There are links on the website that go directly to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or if you want to have a book on your Apple or anything of that nature, all of those options are there. It also is very, very shortly going to be available at most brick-and-mortar bookstores as well. I know it has been shipped out to warehouses, so Barnes & Noble tells me that they should start to have it in stock hopefully in about a week. The official launch date of the Hay House re-release of the book is taking place on December 17th, and that will be the day that all of the locations, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, will be able to be releasing the book on Nook or Kindle or anything of that nature. In addition to the book on the website, you can find information about other services that I do, the personal messages for market that I still do, readings for individuals, as well as shamanic work such as soul retrieval, power retrieval, journeying, and different types of other healing work, and work that is also mentioned in the book that I help to get people to find out about ways that you yourself can do things, can learn things that you can do without always having to go to someone to do it, to try to help to build your energy and your awareness.
You know, before we get back on the topic about the angels and everything, Can you talk a little bit for the people who are listening who don't know what it means to do soul retrieval? I know I've had a chance to actually work with you and do some of this work, and it was absolutely incredible to see. But can you explain what soul retrieval is and what someone would achieve by doing something like that?
Sure. If you picture yourself for just a moment, like if you were to picture your soul, your being, or your energy that comes into your body for a lifetime, you know, to do whatever it is you're going to do. If you picture that just as like a jigsaw puzzle, you know, that that has all the pieces in place, that's kind of what we're like when we come here. You know, all of the pieces of the energy that we have come here to utilize in order to be able to learn what we've come here to learn, to grow, to generate more love and to create more things, that's there. But throughout our lives, there's different times when we go through trauma. And when we go through that trauma, you know, it can be when we're little kids and we're not as able to our brains can't wrap themselves around it. So at times we can lose bits and pieces of that energy. They actually can get locked into a particular space and time, or it's a sort of a situation where it's like with your computer. When your computer gets a virus, the brains of your computer will sequester that, you know, in a part of the computer and make sure that they're locking it away so that in no way can it damage the rest of the computer, you know. And that's what happens when you have what we refer to as soul loss. Pieces of your soul are either separate from you and just get locked in a certain space and time, or your brain will take that experience and sequester it somewhere so that your soul knows that it's there, it has access to it, but your brain kind of forgets about it. So you need someone to help you to be able to bring those pieces back. And kind of classic symptoms, if you will, of soul loss is when someone is going through their life and they have this feeling like there's just something so missing in their life, or they're going through this constant exhaustion or this feeling like they're just not themselves and they can't put a feeling on it, or they have big gaps in their memory over certain periods of time. Sometimes it can even be as extreme as when they're going through addictive problems, because they're trying to fill something in their soul that's just this big empty space that they can't fill. And the process is for the person, it's really a kind of an easy process that the shamanic practitioner goes through a ritual that helps to bring those pieces back and returns them. And as you said, Mark, you went through it, and most often what winds up happening is it becomes a really empowering experience where you find yourself filled with more clarity about your life and understanding about why you've been doing certain things, more energy, more focus. So it's a pretty powerful process.
Yeah, I know from doing the experience with you, I thought it was very incredible to see. I know with my own personal experience, I think we retrieved three different what we call fragments, you know, and
right.
And what was interesting is that for each of those fragments, they represented in this current lifetime three different situations in my life where I had something happen in my life that was enough of a incident that it actually, I guess for a better word, would be to say that part of myself or part of my soul actually splintered off, not all of it, but a piece of it.
Right.
And, exactly. You know, based on that incident. And what I thought was really interesting about that was that, you know, after having that experience of having to pull those three pieces back, was the idea that there was like homework I had to do afterwards, which was, you know, I had to get used to having those pieces of my energy back with me and learning how to incorporate and integrate them in. And it was almost like bringing back some friends and just making them feel like they were at home, you know, bringing them back and making them feel, you know, like they could stay and stuff like that. And that just a very interesting experience. I had not done anything like that before until I got a chance to work with you. And it was just really an incredible experience. So, Sam, do you have any questions before we get back to Jerry and Angel?
I've got several questions. Thanks, Mark. The first one I have relates to something that you said right before we came on air about a new chapter in the re-released book of Messages from Margaret. And I thought I would ask you about that because you weren't specific.
Sure.
And I'd like to know.
Well, in the new book, it's interesting sometimes the way things will come about. And this new chapter actually came as the result of a client who had come to see me. And after the session, Margaret asked me if I would include it in the book. And what it was is that the client who came to see me was going through a real difficult, obsessive, compulsive kind of a period. And she was having trouble with thoughts that were just so obsessive, and she couldn't let go of these thoughts that were running through her mind, this unbelievable worryment that just kept, you know, it playing like this loop in her head, and no matter how she tried to get rid of it, she couldn't do it. And what was interesting is in the message that Margaret gave to her, she tried to explain to her that what was happening on a physical level, but as well as happening on an energetic level, was that our thoughts, you know, we've often heard said that we only use about 10% of our brain for the functions that we have, that 90% of our brain isn't used. What Margaret said is that that's not the case. The case is that, you know, we use parts of our brain. Parts of our brain are always working, but we don't always have the capacity to filter that information through. We only filter so much of it, and that most of what's going on, most of the creative thought that we actually have is in what she referred to as the spaces between what we have as our clear thoughts. Like, for example, I'm talking to you right now, and as I'm talking to you, there are spaces between my words, so that because of the fact that there's spaces, you're able to understand that there's some separation between those things, and that gives you the ability to hear my thoughts and process them. But if I were just to talk like this and everything was the same words and everything was over and over and over and over, you kind of like, what? I didn't get that, you know? And she explains that that's what happens like in the mind of somebody who's going through obsessive thoughts, that the space between thoughts becomes less and less and less, and the ability to utilize that space becomes less, becomes locked in because of like energy attracting other like energy. It draws to it the same thoughts, the same thought, the same thought, until it almost becomes like one huge thought. Now, that can go one of two ways. It can happen by being this obsessive thing, but it also kind of gives us an idea of how we wind up creating and manifesting. Scientists now are realizing that when they look at atoms and subatomic particles, things that actually have density, when you look at those dense things under a microscope, they actually are primarily made up of space and then little particles. But most of it is space, and that space, she says, is thought. Thought is what fills the space around everything and actually creates the magnetic fiber that begins to pull things together and to create by thoughts that come together like thoughts. Then pulling the fiber of matter together allows us to start to manifest thought into reality. That's when we talk about creating our future or creating our you know, anything around us, that's very much what we're talking about. So that's where when she says it's really all in spaces. It's allowing our thoughts to create to attract other like thought and make that happen. She uses the example of like if you think about a piece of fabric, like a blanket, for example, that you know somebody might have quilted. You have this blanket and it's very solid in your hands and it can be very heavy. You know, and you can put it on you and it can make you very warm. But the fact of the matter is, if you really look carefully at it, it's primarily space with stitching that's going around it. And it's made up more of space than it is of solid matter. And that's the same description she uses for thought. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry?
No, I said, does that make sense? Am I explaining it well enough? Or?
Yes, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the story of creation in the little share that you sent us before the show, and it said, Margaret's story of creation up to today.
Now, I'm sure that relates to what you just said. Can you elaborate on it?
Sure. She kind of busts, in the beginning of the book, she busts through three myths. She talks about the myth of creation, the myth of time, and the myth of separation. And in the myth of creation, she says that when we talk about creation, what the Bible talks about is, he said, in the beginning there was darkness, and then from the darkness God created light. And she says, in fact, that was not the case. In the beginning there was light, and there always existed light, and that the Creator was a being of light who, in contemplating and figuring out how to expand its energy further from what it was, it essentially contracted that energy into such a small ball of energy that from that, this huge explosion took place. And when that explosion took place, it created the first, what she refers to as magnetic resonance, the first polarity, the first separation of light and darkness. And as that happened, everything that exploded forth had a perfect balance, this perfect balance of everything light and darkness. And the first level of creation that came from that explosion was a level of beings who were as close to the knowledge of the Creator as there could be, but were now separated into beings of light and darkness. And I want to be careful to explain that when I talk about beings of darkness, I'm not talking about evil beings, you know, the kind of classic, you know, good angels and bad angels that were created. There are just angels that were created of the light, and angels that were created removed from the light, so they were a being of other energy, you know. That would be, you know, if you wanted to do the converse of light and darkness, or cold and hot. And those angels then set forth to create the next level of creation. And the next level of creation were the souls. And at that level of creation, this amazing thing happened, because prior to that time, everything was very distinct. There was the balance of light and darkness. But when souls were created, which were now one step removed from the angels, that level of creation had the ability to now take energy from both places and experience both things, experience energy from the light and experience energy from the darkness. And those souls could put their energy into whatever form they would choose to take. So they could place that energy into a human being. They could place that energy into a tree. They could place that energy into an animal. They could place it into, you know, droplets of water. So those souls are us. That is the essence of our being. And our being has this ability to place our energy into whatever vessel we would like to place it into in order to experience it. She also explains that our souls are immense, so that when we think of our soul, and I know this is what I always thought, I thought my soul was here and now in this body, and when I died, my soul then went to heaven or wherever it was going to go, and then had this like interim period where you were kind of like at a bus stop waiting to go to your next place, and then you would come to another incarnation, you know. She explains that that's not the case at all, that the soul exists and always exists on the spirit plane, but takes part of its energy, pieces of its energy, and places it into all of these different things for the purpose of then having the experience of those things feed back into the soul so the soul can grow and continue the process of creation. And so it's a concept of the soul that I never would have thought of. It's so much grander than you would imagine. And Mark, this kind of goes back to what you're talking about with soul retrieval. that's why when you lose a piece of your soul, you really don't lose it. It's not like it's been destroyed and put away. You know, it simply leaves that vessel at that particular given, you know, point in time, and just sort of is out there in the ethers. But because your soul, that's part of your body, is connected to your greater soul, that's what gives the shaman the ability to go in and retrieve that piece and bring it back. You know, we're kind of communicating with your greater soul to find out where that piece is and being instructed what to do to bring that piece back. So the concept of creation and the concept of the soul is so much bigger than we would have imagined. And knowing that helps us to realize that we have so much more power within this place that we're in right now. We have so much more ability to control our lives and to create more if we learn how to tap into our greater soul a little bit better.
That brings me to the next question, Jerry, about communicating with angels, communicating with our angels. What would you advise our audience in terms of how to start? How do you begin talking to your angel?
Well, I think, first of all, the communication is always taking place. We kind of don't see it, you know, or we don't understand it. What she describes is that because angels were intrinsically involved in our creation, we are literally linked to our angels by DNA. We see DNA as something that's physical. And she explains that DNA is not a physical thing. DNA is an energetic thing. It's part of the very fiber of creation. So what links our angels to us is a true core DNA, so that our thoughts and their thoughts become one. So one of the first things that we can just do, and I think very similar to the situation of what brought me to Margaret, she says that what set my experience apart from a lot of other people, why people would think that they can't communicate, is that day I literally asked to do it. You know, I asked, tell me who you are. And I started the process of the communication by talking to my angel and then trying to find a method to listen, to get it back. Everyone has the ability to communicate with their angels. Angels are kind of dying for the opportunity for that communication to take place more clearly, because they're limited in anything they can do to help us by what we ask them to do. Because to do anything beyond that is actually interfering with our free will, you know, and that's kind of tantamount in our process of what's happening here. So
I have one more. I don't want to cut you off. I have one more quick question.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, and I want to make sure I get this in, because this is a powerful statement. You have the role of the soul in human sexuality. Now that,
right,
I think is extremely interesting. I want to know quickly if you could do it in just a few minutes, your view on this, or Margaret's view.
Right. It's Margaret's view, and I thought it was a really great explanation. She says that sexual energy, a sexual attraction, we normally think of it as a physical thing, or some people even say that your sexuality is actually in your brain. She says it's not. It is actually in your soul. That sexual energy is part of the expression of your soul and your soul's creativity as it comes to the planet. She also explains that we come here, our souls come here many, many times in many, many lifetimes and many, many stories. And depending upon how many times we may inhabit a particular form, we get very used to a patterning of how we express that energy. So if we've come into lifetimes, you know, 95% of the time as a man, and then we come into a lifetime as a woman, we very likely come in as a woman who has attraction to women, characteristics that might be more masculine, or vice versa, if we've lived here as a woman. So what she said is that it's homosexuality, in other words, she says, is just the honest representation of what the soul is saying is the energy that it's come here to do. That's why some people know that they're attracted to men or women at such a young age.
Isn't that a powerful statement? That's very insightful. And I love everything you've said. It's been an amazing, it's almost an hour already. And Mark, you asked me to tell you what time it was. It's 10 to...
Yeah, excellent. So we have a couple of minutes before we can wrap everything up. So, Jerry, what do you think? I know we covered quite a bit today during the radio show and everything, but what do you think is, in closing with Margaret, is probably one of the most powerful messages she wants to get out to everybody that's listening?
Probably the most important and powerful message is for people to recognize that we are creating our reality. We create our reality every day by the decisions that we make, but most importantly, by the thoughts that we think. And it can be very, very easy to get caught in one way of thinking or another way of thinking, to get caught up in all kinds of negative thought, or to have a way to think about our lives in a more positive way. And just real simple explanation, if I could try to do it really fast. For a lot of folks out there, when you talk about energy, they may think to themselves, yeah, energy, that's such an esoteric concept. I don't feel energy. I don't understand energy. But you know what? We all do. We all know people in our life that we love to be around. And we love to be around them because they just radiate good stuff. You know, there's those folks they're like the sun. You just get pulled to their gravitational pull because everybody wants to hang out with them. They're fun to be with. And at the same time, there are those people in our life that we look at our phone and their phone number comes up on our caller ID and we're like, oh, my God, no, I can't talk to them right now. Every time I talk to them, I get exhausted and I just feel like they're sucking the life out of me. That's energy. That is us perceiving the energy of other people. So when we can do that, we can see so clearly that the more we elevate our energy, the more we try to find ways to allow ourselves to be happier, the more we're going to be able to lift our energy. And there's two key things to that. One is gratitude. And she suggests for everyone to begin to keep a gratitude journal and start to write down even the littlest things in your life on a daily basis that make you grateful. Because when you do that, the energy that you create is just like the energy that happens when you give a gift to someone and they're so grateful for it, it just makes you want to go back out and buy them another gift. That's the way that energy works, you know? And the other thing is a technique she suggests that's called affirmations. It's actually something that a guy named Noah St. John teaches, but the concept is not just to affirm by saying, I am prosperous, or something like that, but to change the way you ask your brain questions. So instead of saying, why is there always more money than there is money, to say to yourself, why is it so easy for me to find all the money that I need? It's almost treating your brain like it's Google, and it's searching out the answers that will help to bring positive, empowering energy to you instead of energy that's going to hold you back. And that's the thing that she tells people about, whether it's religion or political leaders or whoever we follow. If you're listening to people whose energy is expansive, who are always teaching you ways to expand your spirit, become more than you are, then those are things that are coming from the light. But if you're listening to things and following things that are restrictive and want to repress people or repress your own thoughts or other stuff, then that's coming from darkness, and that's not going to help you expand your creativity. It's just going to make you shrivel up.
Wow.
Wow, that's incredible. So, So, want to thank you for being on the show and congratulate you on your second book. You know, it's just absolutely incredible. I know I've done some readings with you myself, and it's really neat to be able to kind of submit my questions and then have that letter come back from Margaret saying, "Dear Mark," you know, and just see that very loving energy come through from the angels as far as giving guidance and everything. And I highly recommend it for anybody out there that's listening, that if you have a chance, you should experience some of that, and also to buy his book and see the incredible messages and everything that's coming through. So you are listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. This is Mark Rawson with my co-host, Pam Latour. Pam, it's great having you on with me this evening.
Thank you. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we have our friend Jerry Gavin with us this evening. And if you could just tell everybody where they can find your book and how they can book a reading with you and get some guidance from your angels and your website and stuff like that.
Sure. The website is jerrygavin.com, jerrygavin.com. From the website, pretty much you can learn how to do anything, whether it's to book an individual reading. I do readings over the phone, so it's very easy to arrange for that to be done. You can get the book actually right now. The current version of Messages from Margaret is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and there are links to their websites right there, and it should be available in brick-and-mortar stores pretty much everywhere within the next couple of weeks, and out on Kindle and Nook on December the 17th. So if you are looking for, I say this on behalf of Margaret, if you're looking for a holiday gift that you might want to give to people in your life that you really think would be an uplifting way to change their life, I can't tell you how many people email me to say that this book has changed their lives, and that's got to be the most humbling and amazing experience to hear.
That's great. Thank you. So, like I said, you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about the radio show and the guests that we have on it, including links to them, you can go to our radio website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And thank you, Pam, for being on, and thank you, Jerry, for being on. And I hope both of you have a great evening.
Thank you
very much for having me.
Thanks, Jerry.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.